Today's interview is with Elsie Escobar, and I love this chick, honestly. She is, I guess, not direct, but we're definitely in a competing space, both of us service podcasters or potential podcasters. What I love about Elsie and why I wanted to get her on the show is the fact that she is just such a passionate and supportive person. Where some people would see us as competitors, Elsie just sees us as collaborators. She's often sharing my stuff around in her huge podcasting community, She Podcasts. I recommend you join if you are a podcaster. And her story is just incredible. This is what I love about doing this podcast, is that I get to sit down with people and not have the regular old conversations about entrepreneurship and some tips for sales and marketing and whatever, but we actually get, not that there's no value in that, there is, but that's not what this show is about. You know, this show is about diving deep into people's stories and learning that none of us are without struggle. We've all faced our fair share of shit in our life. It just presents differently. And if this is your first time here, I would love for you to hit subscribe. There's some real gold in my back catalogue of 100 plus eps and some real awesome people and topics coming your way over the coming weeks and months. Elsie's story is so incredible. Born in a war-torn country, moved to the States and really found herself in a war of her own. Anyway, I won't say much more. I will just dive straight in and introduce you to Elsie Escobar. Welcome to Carlosophy's Stories Behind Success. I'm Carly Nimmo. It's so easy to fall into comparisonitis as an entrepreneur, and it can be paralyzing. In my own journey, I've come to understand that regardless of your level of success, fame, or fortune, we're all suffering from the same stories of fear, struggle, and failure. So let's talk about it.
I was raised in a war-torn country, so I was born in El Salvador in Central America. At that time, the country, I think when I was born in 1972, everything seemed to be, you know, as okay as it can be in a in that type of an environment. But then the country went into a civil war, and there was a lot of violence that was happening in the space. Tons of exposure to helicopters and discussions of bombs being dropped and gunfire and curfew. That was perhaps one of the scariest things, was curfew time, because it was sort of like when you were punished, like for me as a kid, because I was still a little kid, where it was sort of like, okay, everybody needs to be indoor at 7 o'clock. Why? Because you're not allowed to be outside. Why? Because if you're outside, something bad can happen. Oh, you know, and so as a kid, you're like, what does that even mean, right? Yeah. And having to stay overnight at somebody else's house if you didn't make it in time to be home by 7. And, you know, I still don't know why all these things happen. All I know is that these are the stories that I have had in my head. And I had a level of anxiety, obviously, because of all of these different things that happened to us there. You know, we had a sort of like a robbery type thing where people broke into our home. My mom was just violently beat up and things like that. I wasn't home during this time. Now there was my dad, but, you know, that kind of stuff, that was basically the instigator for us to leave the country. And we left when I was 9. I came into the United States in 1981, and that kind of like has colored, obviously, the rest of my experience. But I didn't really know. It's like I was 9 years old. So part of it, I understood. Some of it, I don't know. I didn't want to ever wear that in for people to see. You know, it's not like I was like, I am an immigrant. You know, that was not a card I ever played or anything like that. But I did recognize that there, embedded in myself, was a sort of like the ability, like a scared quality, an anxiety that was deep in my core, like at a real deep, deep level, where I suffered from anxiety when I was going to middle school, where you know, just the changes, it made me be super, super nauseous. Like I would wake up and smell eggs and I needed to go throw up. Like it was disgusting. And I, you know, going to school, I was okay from about 8 a.m. until around 12 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And then at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I would start to worry about the next day having to come home. And I hated that. It was like, holy crap, I can't handle this. Right. So, you know, it just became so embedded. I didn't know how to fix that. I didn't know that there was a problem, you know?
Yeah, because you've spent your entire life in fight or flight, you know?
Exactly. Totally. I didn't know how to make that go away from me. I didn't know how to, yeah, anyway, there's that. Now, that said, it also didn't teach me sort of to speak up. And because I was raised in that culture of being scared, there were times when, you know, the things my parents told me or things like that was about, be careful when you go outside. Don't do that. No, you're not allowed to sleep over anybody's house. No, you can't do that. So there was this this thing where I was sort of like a lot, you know, everything was basically, no, we are afraid. You need to stay safe was the thing. And so I didn't develop the social skills to really navigate the real world. And I also was very naive and incredibly positive, optimistic, magical, you know, like I loved cartoons and like, you know, Disney movies and things like that. Even when I was way late teens, early 20s, I was so into cartoons. Like I was such a good girl. Like I didn't do anything bad. I just was sweet. And I just thought I believed in magic and Santa Claus, you know, what I mean? Yeah. That kind of stuff. And so, but I was drawn to the wrong kind of guy. Right. Because I don't even know why I guess that's part of who being girls. And I certainly hope that that's not the case, really. But I was indoctrinated in some way that I didn't even know to be drawn towards not the best type of choices. And I also didn't have the skill set to navigate what a good guy was. One of my first boyfriends, I remember my parents speaking to me about him. And mind you, it's not that he was a bad guy at all. I mean, he got in a little bit of trouble, but he was really smart. Like I saw how smart he was and I wanted him to do better. He got in trouble a lot, but I'm like, dude, you're so smart. And I advocated for him and I was like, you can get into the smart programs and blah, blah. But anyway, so my parents came up to me and they said, you know what? We have a little, this is what they said. And it's just, I almost wanted to, listen, we have a little feeling in our stomach that he's not the right guy for you. It just, there's nothing wrong with him. He's not, there's nothing bad about him, but we have this little feeling. I was like, what? What are you talking about? This little feeling? I got so pissed off, you know, because I'm like, how dare you? How dare you, you little feeling? What is that? You have no, you know, I was a teenager. You have no idea. So I think that because they talked to me in such a nice, kind way, they never yelled at me. They never said, I was like, forget about it. I'm going to do what I'm going to do. I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. And I sort of, you know, I made bad choices again. So I didn't really learn from that experience at all, from all of that stuff. And then I hooked up with another guy who was a complete idiot. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because of the skill set that I didn't have. The skill set that I didn't have to honor myself, to feel my worth, to speak my mind, to speak out, because I was always so quiet and I was sweet. And guys like that. They like sweet girls. It's not that they were taking advantage of me. It's like I was making them feel better about themselves because I was such a good girl. You know what I mean? That's how I feel that what happened, right? You know, that time in college, basically, almost every single man or guy, young man that approached me always mentioned, hey, you know, he's not that good of a guy. Like, why are you with him? You know, that kind of stuff. And I was always like kind of half in and half out flirting with these other guys and that kind of stuff. But nobody really called me out on my choices. Nobody ever said, really, you're fucking up. This is not okay. You are so much better than this person. I even though I heard that, but nobody really laid it on the line. And because of that, I sort of stuck around with this person for 15 years.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was, and I think that the reason that I kind of want to bring it to that is because if I would have stayed with him, I would have possibly died, you know, from health issues, from stress, from not being able to be who I was, because the relationship escalated to such a level of, you know, he ended up being an alcoholic and a drug addict and I think a sex addict. There's points in my story where I had isolated myself to such a degree and never told anybody the truth. Nobody ever knew what was really going on ever, that I didn't even know that some of the things that were happening were simply not okay at all.
Yeah, totally relating to everything that you
I know.
It's like, you know, I was very, very similar and found myself in a relationship much different, but not healthy in any way, mm-hmm. shape or form. And I stayed with him for longer than I should have. It wasn't 15 years, but it was probably close to 4 or 5. And part of it was I didn't want to tell anyone what was really going on because then I had to admit it to myself too, you know?
Yes. Oh my God. Yes. Yes. But, and the reason I kind of want to talk about this so strongly is because I know I don't want this to happen to another woman because we are so much more. And anyway, so I would sneak and tell certain key sort of acquaintances that were also misaligned in their choices so that they couldn't really, not necessarily judge me, because it wasn't about being judged. It wasn't that. It was about being held accountable.
Yeah.
So if you're a liar and I'm lying, then I can just go to the liar and say, hey, I'm lying. And they go, oh, I know, I've been there. I'm lying too, you know? And so then it's like this, okay, we're lying together. Yay. You know what I mean? So it becomes something that is not, I don't know, we're not helping each other. Nobody's calling each other's out, because if somebody else calls you out, then it's like I can turn around and go like, well, you're doing this. So what's the difference? I don't know. And I think that that's really where it got to the point where I felt it in my bones. I mean, there was a point when I literally thought, because I'm also raised Catholic, cradle Catholic. And so there's an insane amount of guilt about any choices that you make. And in Catholicism, there is black and white, like there's no middle ground and about a lot of different things. And therefore, the choices that I was making already had essentially put me in a state of, what do you call it, mortal sin. So why would I then, if I was already in quotes and stain, I'm putting stained on, like I have a scarlet letter on me, like why look for something more? Because I've got this already. I mean, I've already fucked it up, right? So I'm like, and so there was that part of it. And I didn't quite know how to take that mindset out of it. So I resigned myself to sacrifice my life of not being a mother ever. Because this is not a person I wanted to have. Well, I kind of did want to have kids, but it was sort of like, I don't even know if this is a healthy thing. Like, I was like, it's not going to ever happen. We're not going to get married. Like, so I sort of washed my hands out of the whole thing. I was like, well, poor me, I will never ever have kids and I'll just give up my life to stay in this relationship. What the hell is that?
Yes, we can be a martyr, can't we?
Oh, yes. You know, and I was like, what? And of course I was afraid. But anyway, in the process of it, I did make it out, you know. I
mean, what was the thing that pushed you to that?
I think it was lots of conversations with myself, lots of sort of like inner looking inward, you know, and truth be told, months before, when I was still in this, mind you, this relationship is really strange. I mean, it's obviously it was a very unhealthy relationship. So half of the year, this man was away because he always left to go do stuff. I always was left which is fine because that's when I thrived, when he wasn't around. So it was just like this connection of us not being around. We didn't really have, like, he didn't really come to my parents' house. Like, it was just messed up. He wasn't, no, none of my friends knew what he looked like. Like, I just would come home. Like, I would use him as an excuse to not be participating in things, basically. But we weren't really kind of together. But anyway, so I lived my life like normal. That's the other thing. It's like he wasn't enough in it enough to for it to really be an issue, except when he was around. So it's lame. I was a yoga instructor back in the day, and I had my website. And one day I got an email from a carpenter, of all things, from across the United States, that he said he searched, he was looking for yoga blocks, and he found my website, and all he said is, "And you are very beautiful. See ya around. Bye-bye." That's it. It was basically a two sentences. And I was so intrigued. It was literally like, I was like, Jesus has come for me. Carpenter. Anyway. That's all he said. And I was like, oh, that's sweet. You know, and I was like, "That, thank you so much. You are very kind. That was very sweet of you. You made me blush. Bye-bye." You know, that kind of thing. And this conversation sort of grew from this little email. We kind of emailed back and forth very randomly at odd times. But all of the emails were these insanely high-level discussions of life, death, philosophy, mortality, what love really is, how you live your life, and all of these things that I don't get an opportunity to ever talk about. And I was like riveted by this guy. He was so amazing. His brain was so amazing. So anyway, we kept the conversation and he called me out on my bullshit. He was like, "What are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing with all this crap? What's the scoop?" And any excuse that I gave him, he was like, "You know, that's a lie. This is not okay. This is not okay. This is not okay. Hello, he's an alcoholic. Period. The end. That is it. And you're welcome to stay. That's fine. But just so you know that you're choosing this." Oh, he pissed me off so badly.
I bet he
so,
did.
You know, and so there were so he'd just be like that clear. And I was, I'm like, how dare he? I mean, there's actually a couple of yoga classes because I started podcasting my yoga classes and that's how I got into the medium. And so there are a couple of yoga classes that are directly to him.
And you recorded those?
Oh, yeah, they're out. But of course, they're subtle and they're covered and they're, they're covered under the guise of the overall teaching of yoga, right? And it's not that I disagreed. It's just like I actually taught about when somebody is in your face telling you truths, how do you deal with that? So that was literally the lesson of the class. It wasn't like you suck, dude. It was really more like
you teach what you need to learn.
Exactly. Yes, absolutely. So it was like, how do you deal? And I put it in the third person. I'm sure you, all of you people that are in my class here, have learned, when somebody comes up and they basically give you the business and you're like, fuck you. I don't want anything to do with you. And you totally push them away. But really, you know that they're right. So what next? What next? What do you do? And that's the class, so you like embody that and you figure it out in your body. Anyway, that's what I did. So in the process, he gave me the support to leave. He gave me the emotional support to just be like, if you need to do it, he literally just said like, these are the steps. And then he just facilitated my ability to know that I wasn't stuck. So I was like, oh, I can leave. And how do I do it? How do I do it? I don't know he's like, you just do it. You just do it. You pick up and you go. Okay. Yeah. Nobody. And
but it's not that easy. But it's not
exactly. You start to come up with all that stuff. And I thought, you know what? It's like nobody is going to come save me. Nobody is going to come save me. Nobody's going to come here and make me do it. Nobody's going to come here and grab my stuff and put it away. No one is going to do that. I have isolated myself to such an extent that I cannot even call my parents, who were living an hour away, because I was embarrassed, ashamed of so many lies. even though they would have, of course, 100% and supported me and all this stuff, even though, but you know. And so I finally, you know, went to one of my friends, took two of my best friends, and I was like, can you help me? Can you show up here and grab my stuff with me? And can you take me? And can you house me, please? And so I did. One day it was like, boom, let's go. Bye-bye. September 12th, I can tell you. I took 12 pictures of that day as it went down. Because there was a thing on the internet at that time that was called, I don't know if you ever heard of it, it was called the 12 of 12, which I thought was the coolest thing ever. So every 12th of the month, you took 12 pictures of your day. And then you posted it online and you hashtagged it 12 of 12. And then everybody in the community would be able to see your day. So that was like it. I did not post these pictures, but I do take the 12 pictures. So I have those pictures of that day. But I literally came home, grabbed my stuff, bye-bye, and I left, never to come back. So, yeah, and so that was the beginning of my life. The end. No, I'm just kidding.
Okay, see you later.
Just kidding.
All right, you're off the hook. I'll speak to you later.
I know, exactly.
It's so funny, isn't it, though? Like, I'm actually going through this is why I love doing it the way that I do this show, where it's like, you know, no preconceived ideas, no real intention other than showing up and sharing, because it always, without fail, relates to something that I'm going through at the time. You know, there's always parallels. And it's just so interesting. So, you know, for your story, I relate to all of it because, yeah, I've been in that kind of relationship, a really unhealthy relationship. I know what it's like to completely isolate yourself off from the rest of the world due to shame and guilt and fear. And then how liberating it is when you finally choose you. And then that's when the work really starts. We think that's where it ends because, you know, it's like, I don't know. I think often when we're in that space and when we are, well, really any situation where we feel like we need to be saved from and we're waiting for the white knight, you know, it doesn't have to be a bad relationship. It can be money issues or, you know, whatever it is. We're waiting for this white knight to come and save us and he never comes because he is you. And then there's this preconceived idea that then we jump on the white horse and, you know, the white knight comes and saves us, which is us, and we jump on the horse and we ride off into the sunset and it's forever, happily ever after. And, but it's really just the beginning of the story, right?
Yeah. And absolutely. It's, yeah.
So what's the rest of the story? What happens when
you... I know, you're like, what's the rest? No, you know, it took me, I mean, being away from this, it was emotionally really crazy, right? It was like some of the most powerful prayers that I've ever prayed happened during that time. I mean, it was such a tough time because I had to hide because he was incredibly unstable. I mean, it was not an okay situation, right? So I disappeared. I literally disappeared. No one would, you know, I didn't really contact him. Really, we had a couple of conversations on the phone a couple of times, but that was about it. And he was out of his mind, but he didn't know where I was. But I continued doing my things, teaching and whatnot. And it was what was really crazy is that as I actually, this is before, because I was still in that apartment before I moved out. That day, I was thinking, like, how am I? Like, I had decided I am leaving. I made this choice. How am I going to leave? Like, how? That night, like when I made the decision, I made it with my whole self. I'm leaving. Like, there's no fun. I get a phone call from a director of mine. 10 years had passed since we had spoken to each other because I studied theater in grad school, and I worked for regional theater companies here in the United States, actually primarily in Denver. So I worked with him in Denver 10 years before that. And he was like, hey, Elsie. And I'm like, hey, what's up? And he's like, I have a role for you. Are you up for leaving in 2 weeks to go to where did I go? Well, I forgot what the state it was. To Arizona, please, to do the show. It would be great. I'd love you to do the show. And I was like, oh my God, like I hadn't done any stage acting in at that time in at least 7 years. So I had been on stage in 7 years. I wasn't pursuing an acting career. I was not doing any of that stuff. He was like, yeah. And I was like, okay. So basically, in 2 weeks after that, I left Los Angeles with nothing. And I had a job for 2 months in a different state. Isn't that insane?
It's so crazy. You know, I mean, there's all these cliches. And I'm actually been going through a situation where, you know, someone that's dear to me has been having a really rough time in a relationship and has left. And you know, when you've been in one of those relationships, it's very easy to really forget who you are and the magic of who you are, because it's kind of been beaten out of you. And so, you know, I just asked her to do a very simple exercise, which was, you know, write down her ideal day. And I know she's going to listen to this, so it's kind of like, it's hard for me to say this. And even that is hard for her, you know, because she's still in it. And she goes straight for the how. And I'm actually doing this myself because the world is my mirror, right? So I'm writing my book and my brain keeps switching into how am I going to publish this thing? How am I going to make a living from writing? How am I going to, you know, how? But then now I'm just coming back to, well, it doesn't matter anyway. I have to do the work. I just have to write and trust.
Yeah.
And the how will show up. But we get, it's so easy for us to get stuck in the how and the details when if we do just let it go and we just fully decide and stand in that power and be like, this is changing, the how will turn up.
It kind of hits you in the face. So there's lots of different things that it's sort of like that there is no way. It's not something that's wishy-washy. It's sort of like it's like here. And there is no but, no, because it's so clear where you're like, oh my God, right? And so that was the beginning of that entire transition out of where I was and the things that I had done and or being stuck in a specific place. I basically had to start over and say goodbye to all of these different things to basically be with myself, okay? Well, mind you, I shouldn't say that because that's being disingenuous. Obviously, I was by myself during this time. I was by myself during this transition time. It all happened so fast. It's crazy. But obviously, I think a huge X factor as to how all of this facilitated was this man that had reached out to me via the interwebs. Well, truth be told, he is the father of my babies. And he is... So he ended up basically giving me all of the things, sight unseen, basically, because I had never seen him. I didn't see him. Basically, we saw each other for the first time in Arizona, but had not ever talked. We had only talked online and whatnot, and that was sort of like the beginning of another whirlwind of choices and things that happened incredibly fast. But he is a man, you know, he is like a really strong, very evolved, very like just conscious and smart and articulate and all of these different things that I didn't have before, you know, where it was like, he's a grown up. Unfortunately, there's a part of it that it's like he is the bigger grown-up because I lacked a lot of skills and I had been in a relationship that was totally messed up, you know? So my skill set in having positive relationship communication was incredibly lacking.
Yeah, I just wrote down,
you know,
how, like, because, you know, after you've been through something like that, there is this process where we do have to kind of come back to ourselves and rediscover ourselves and I guess become more self-aware of the patterns and the behaviors and all that kind of shit that got us there in the first place. But also there's this element where, you know, if we have never experienced a healthy, loving relationship, then it's very easy for us to put the barriers up and really sabotage that. So how do you feel like, you know, how did that transition happen for you?
Well, I did have some alone time because I was not enough. I feel that if I were to do it again in some way, and I think that what happened is that there were many things that were coming into play here also, because it wasn't necessarily like if it would have been LC at 30, years old, there would have been a different time constraint around everything, right? It's like I would have been able to, I feel that time was still there. Whereas when all of this went down, I was 35. And when are you going to have the babies? You know what I mean? That was like literally one of the biggest things. It's like all of these different things. And we both felt so strongly. And there was this like incredible mutual understanding of all of these different things that were coming into play. So that was like one part of things. So it's not like we were just like, we have to make babies now because, you know, it's not like it wasn't like that. But there was an element of there that every transformative thing that I had to go through, every piece of maturity, every piece of inner work, everything that I had to sit down and deal with and see and cry about and be angry about and get pissed off about and talk about and get through, everything was compressed. Like there was no time to, okay, it's time for you to process. Let's move into the other room. It was like not like that. It was like, you know what? You are a grown up now. This is what you have to deal with. Process. It was like, okay. So it was sort of in hyperspeed.
Yeah. Like, and a lot of it expands too, right? So it's like, yes. If you've just given yourself a 2-week window, it all yep. happens within that 2 weeks. But if you're giving yourself, mm-hmm. you know, I don't know. Yeah, I totally get what you're saying there.
Yeah. And so, and the other aspect of it and is that I had been doing a lot of work too. So it's not that, obviously, yes, there was a lot of messed up things that were happening, but I did have enough inner wisdom through 10 years of studying yoga and teaching it and interpersonal skills and communication skills. And I'm a smart person. I know things. I'm an intuitive. Like there's all of these different things, different layers of wisdom that I hadn't been able to follow through in. And he gave me the space to do it. So it was like, go do your business. And the other thing is, he also has that same level of intelligence. So he's also super, super like in his body, in like, you know, carpenter man, like builder of things, you know, salt of the earth. But at the same time, there is the other aspect of it, which is this deeply intuitive, sensitive person who has all of this other knowledge. Because he's a, you know, Reiki practitioner and he had been meditating all this time. So like there are all these things that we were able to then really quickly rise the conversation above what I guess normal people would do.
Well, you had a bigger toolbox, you know?
Yes, we did. We had a bigger toolbox to deal with stuff. And I'm not saying in any way, shape, or form that it's been easy, that it's like, ooh, we found each other. And it's like, no, there's been a lot of growth, a lot of frustration, a lot of doubts, a lot of sort of like, oh my God, you know, we gave up a lot of different things that each of us did. We are grown-ups though, and we know how to deal with it. He is also very skilled at asking for what he wants and what he needs. You know, and these are things that are not acceptable. These are things that are acceptable. And then for me to understand, okay, I get that. That doesn't mean he doesn't love me. That just means he is letting me know these are things that are not okay, behaviors that are not okay, and that I need to look at this, you know, and it's in, and part of the process is, again, it's coming back full circle and I'm coming back to this again. And oh gosh, Carly, this is even crazier. So this is why I feel, maybe for your friend as well, a lesson, right? So I do have now everything that I want. I have this incredible man who is willing to have conversations in ways that I didn't even know was possible, right? And a level of intimacy with him that I have never had with anyone before. And as a friend, he is a really good person, above and beyond anything else. He is a solid human being, and I adore him to death. And I have these beautiful babies, you know, and it's just so great that we live in this world, and I'm so happy that we have this, and it's hard, but we can do it. Now, just a couple of months ago, I start getting emails from my ex who has gone off the rails. Like totally, this is 10 years later, mind you, a decade. Gone off the rails, totally lost his mind to such a degree that the kind of words he was using was scaring the crap out of me. I started to reach out to law enforcement. I started to figure out how to protect myself online, how to protect my babies, how to figure out, because he was threatening to do some pretty serious things. And I thought like, oh my God, I don't know what, oh my God, right? And it brought up incredible feelings of how I used to feel. So it was so weird because the feelings that started to come up, I had put away. I had just thrown away. I didn't have time. You know, it was there. And then they started to come back and I was freaking out. My body was freaking out. I was so scared. It was like PTSD. It was like I was going through this entire, again, process of trauma from this guy. You know, and when I reached out to law enforcement, they were like, you know, it's a little freaky that we can't find him anywhere online. I was like, thanks, dude, because he's nowhere. He has somehow been covert in his entire life after I left, blaming me, of course, for absolutely everything that's rotten in his life. But, you know, but anyway, so comes a point where then he reaches out to my partner via Facebook.
Oh, God.
And he starts a conversation. Like as a, what do you call it? It would seem like a teenager kind of thing. Something like, has she cheated on you yet?
Oh,
that kind
God.
Of thing. And I was like, what is that? It's like you start to think about like, okay, he is 47 years old. The ex is 47 talking to another man saying, has she cheated on you yet? It just seems like that's like, what is that?
Yeah.
It's like, what? And so my partner comes up and he goes, what is this? What is this? And I was like, I didn't, you know, because I hadn't been checking my email, you know, all that kind of stuff. And so I was left in a situation where I was like, I have no idea what's happening. But at the same time, obviously it hurt him and it brought back things back. And he was like, you know, this is really hard. 10 years later, and this is coming back. This is not okay. This is not what I signed up for. Of course I did. You know, I mean, and he understands that he kind of did. But at the same time, it's like, you know, this here needs to be dealt with. And you can do it or I can do it. But he said to me, you need to cut that whatever energetic cord you have attached there, conscious or subconscious. You need to deal with that. Cut the shit. Have it be done. I can do it too, he said, for you, but I'm not going to. You need to deal. And I was like, oh my God. You know, it's like, and I went from like literally 2 months of complete and utter despair, anxiety, fear. And I had to reach out to people. I had to reach out my best friends, people that I hadn't talked to about this in any time, you know, and I reached out to, you know, some people that I've never reached out to for help because, you know, you don't kind of don't want to use people and stuff, but I was like, I need you. I need you so bad. And I had the blessing of having this person arrive. Like she is an amazing, wise woman in her 70s who spoke to me for 2 hours. Sat me down and gave me the business in the most caring, beautiful, life-affirming way. And she brought it back full circle to the initial birth of me, of being in El Salvador, in the war, in that anxiety. So she's brought it all back in and she goes, you need to deal with this stuff. You got to go in deep and see what that's about. Because it's like you were in a war and then you went to another war and now you have another war. So deal with the war.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I was like, oh my God. You know, so I think that that's what it is specifically for younger women to understand that our choices are precious and our bodies are precious. And something that this wise woman said to me, she was like, my grandmother told me, don't ever have sex with anybody that you don't want to become.
Ooh.
And I was like, holy crap. But she told me that her grandmother told her that. And I was like, whoa, that's deep, man. And that's what I kind of want to tell you ladies out there right now. To me, that resonated so deep. Just the thought of that. because then I thought, like, yeah, we do become our partners when we're intimate with people. You know, that is so true. Not that we become them, but you know what I mean? There's such an intimate sharing of our DNA in such, or our cellular, like, it's intimate. So it's in that sense, we do become them in some way, whether we want to accept it or not. Isn't that crazy?
Totally crazy. I was just thinking about all the people I've had sex with, and there's been a lot. You're like, most of them were not good human beings.
I know. And I was just thinking, you know, and so it was like, and obviously, and you know, this wise woman, she told me, she goes, and I did not do that, but I'm telling you that. So it was like one of those things where at the same time, it wasn't like she was, you know, but all I'm saying is that in this lovely way that we have as women now to be able to support each other through this with minus all the criticism, minus all of the judgment, because I was so afraid of being judged. No one is going to judge you. We all fuck up. But we do need to get over our shame and ask for help if we need it.
Yeah, and we have to be okay with speaking up when things are not okay too, right?
Yes.
It's like, I mean, and this translates outside of intimate relationships and definitely into business and into, you know, into life in general. We are so quick. And I've actually spoken about this on a live stream last week where I just was totally all over the place. But this thing where as women, we often discount our intuition and do things that don't feel right to us for fear of speaking up, for fear of making somebody else uncomfortable. And through that, we're just not honoring ourselves. And it's so, you know, that I remember watching an episode of Oprah years and years ago where she spoke about this kind of stuff, and she was like, you know, have you ever had, and there was this story, she told this story, or someone on the show told this story of this woman who got home, and I think she went to get in the lift and there was a guy there and she had a weird feeling about it, but she got into the lift anyway and was attacked or something. And, you know, and there was another story about a woman who had come home and felt like someone had been in her home, but she discounted that, and somebody had been in her home and ended up, you know, coming in and bloody raping her or something crazy like that. But so often we get in the lift with the person that we're getting the weird vibe from because we don't want them to feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And in return, we put ourselves at risk, and we're constantly reinforcing to ourselves that our feelings aren't worthy, you know, and that it's not safe for us to speak up. And I feel like, you know, the world, and this brings us to the work that you do in the world right now, right? It's like women need to feel safe in speaking up. And it's scary as fuck to do so because, you know, for me, I speak about depression and anxiety a lot. And I just wrote a post the other day after I had an anxiety attack on Friday where I thought I was having a heart attack. I ended up in the doctor's having an ECG and turns out it was anxiety. And I was kind of like, phew.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. But it's like, you know, sweet. And part of that anxiety has been me putting so much pressure on myself and me not listening to my heart and discounting my own feelings and not speaking up because I was afraid of what retribution that would bring. And I think so many women feel that, right? Like we're afraid to speak our truth because, A, it may make people feel uncomfortable. B, it might make us a target, you know, and we see that happen all the time to women who speak up and then have their shit thrown back in their face. Like it's scary.
No, I absolutely agree. One of the reasons that I'm so passionate about what I do is because I didn't speak up. I'm still learning to speak up. I still have that in me that feels like it's a necessity for me to practice. It's a necessity for me to facilitate, to advocate for other women to be able to do so. Because it's not that I didn't have that, because if I would have turned around, if I would have asked, I would have been supported. I would have in a heartbeat. but I didn't. I isolated myself. So in the process is that I found that in speaking up, in speaking out, I have become so much more powerful. Duh. But at the same time, it also helps. It, you know, one of the courses, like there's a course I've only taught one time. Somebody asked me to do it and it was for introverts. And I'm like, yes, that's awesome. That's me. She goes like, you want to do a course? And I was like, sure. And I came up with this thing that I've been wanting to do, which was actually about voice. You know, it was about podcasting and voice. And everybody talks about podcasting from the sense from, you know what it is. It's like, you know, you could market it. You'd be an expert in the space. Yeah. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
But what it did for me, my podcast was my lifeline mm-hmm. when I started.
Yeah.
When I taught my yoga class, that was me practicing. It was me practicing to be. It was me practicing to be the woman I wanted to be. It was me resonating at that level and just stepping into that voice. It was me listening to me talk. It was me helping myself. It was a self-help tool.
Yeah.
It wasn't, I want to market myself and be the best yoga teacher, audio podcaster lady that I ended up being sort of thing. It was sort of like, this is what it's helped me do. It's helped me step up. It's helped me connect with other people behind the microphone that are really awesome people that helped me literally live my life. They saved me. And I've said that so many different times, you know, the voices in my head saved my life. Those podcasters saved my life. Not because they were doing stuff like, well, because this is like very key in, you know, Carly, what you're doing right now is a very specific conversation. Obviously, it's very impactful and you ask really strong questions and whatnot. So it's a different level of conversation. What I was talking about is like, you know, the guy that was podcasting about Mac computers, the guy that was telling stories about Hollywood, the guy that was, you know, just getting behind the microphone and like just going off on some random, like, you know, just narratives that were very sort of artsy, you know, and all of those people I fell in love with and they saved me, not because they said anything that was like mind blowing, but just because they were speaking out. And oh my God, that was so empowering to me. So that's why I do what I do. And part of it is that I want you to do that too. I mean, and then again, in this course, it was like, there's something that happens when you write things down, you know, like when you're writing a book and all that kind of stuff, that's like, that's great. That's awesome. You're writing. Sweet. That's powerful. But there's something else that happens, especially with deeper truths, that when you say them out, that when they're out of your mouth into the space, that's a whole other thing that you're working through. That's a whole other level. And sometimes we have to rehearse it. Sometimes we have to practice. And it's not enough to just go like, okay, the next time we talk, I'm going to say this. Yeah. Or I'm going to write it down and I'll do this. No, because part of it is that you have to fucking say it. You have to get used to having it in your mouth. You have to get used to having it come out. Because if not, it's going to shock you. Or you'll cry all the way through, which is what happens with me. So it's like, I start saying, I'm going to say something really powerful. And you know, they're like, what is wrong with you? Then they can't get over the fact that I can't stop crying.
Yeah.
And my words are all jumbled and I don't ever get it out. And oh, poor baby. And it's like, no, I'm not crying because I want a hug. I can't. It's hard. You know?
Yes. So. I so do. And, you know, podcasting saved me too, not just that, but blogging. Like I started blogging in 2009 when I was diagnosed with depression and it was a lifeline. And then after my, you know, second bout of depression after my office collective, you know, collapsed and my whole world collapsed around me, my podcast became the lifeline. And it's always been me processing my own shit. And,
yeah, right?
and a practice, you know, it mm-hmm. is a practice. It's, this isn't natural. It's not, we're taught to not show our shadow side and feel ashamed and feel guilt. These are things that are indoctrinated into our souls. And mm-hmm. it's the practice is speaking up. And it is, it's so fucking uncomfortable. It's so uncomfortable.
Yep.
And sometimes you do cry. And, you know, and sometimes you're in the middle of what you're saying and you're feeling like, oh my God, what the fuck am I saying? This is just not going anywhere, you know, but on the outside, that's not what it looks like.
Right, exactly.
And I think
absolutely.
Yeah, and I think what actually happened for me anyway was that the fear is always there. The fear never goes away, but the passion for the transformation far outweighs the fear. So for me, it's like, you know, yeah, like I can keep this shit to myself, but you know what happened when I kept that shit to myself? I ended up depressed as all fuck. And mm-hmm. and for me, yeah. the reconnection to myself has been through speaking openly and honestly about all the shadow shit that goes on in my life. Instead of hiding it and feeling ashamed of it, just putting it out on the table. Look, I'm human. I have anxiety. I had a fucking anxiety attack on Friday. Like it's, but this is relatively normal. We all have our struggle. It just shows up differently. And the shame and the guilt is the thing that really creates the separation between us.
Yeah, absolutely. It is incredible what both the power of speech and the power of listening can really have in transformation. You know, it's been such a huge blessing for me. I'm not sure how I would have managed as much as I managed minus that. So for me, it's a much deeper platform and desire for what podcasting can be for people, and at a much richer level that goes way beyond what the conversation is or the narrative is around it at this moment. And it's just become incredibly clear to me what that is really for me. And I didn't know how to name it before, but now I kind of do. And so I'm going to follow that. And it's part of the fact that there's so many lessons that we learn on the online space too, you know, and I'm sure, you know, we've done courses up the wazoo and as you know, and then we know how to do these things and the marketing stuff and the sales and the blah, blah, and which is great. And I think it's awesome. Right. But at the same time, there's also another part where I get an opportunity now. I finally started to see like, okay, this is it. I finally found the little whatever that is, right? The little thing. And you have to do it in order to feel it. You have to really do it. And then order. And like, I had to keep stepping in. I'm like, what the hell? I'm always talking about the same stuff. Like, does this have a name? Like, is this a thing? And so then, instead of trying to label it because with other words or what other people thought that I was good at, I was like, you know what? This is me. This is what I'm going to do. I am just going to step out as this person who advocates for podcasting, period. Because I don't want to teach you how to do it, because other people can do that and I can do it, but I'm not a fan. And so it's like, other people can't do what I do. That's when I started thinking, like, nobody else is going to do it. I'm bitching about why don't we have X, Y, and Z? Hello. And it's because no one can do it, but I can. So I'll do it. I'm Ron.
Love it.
Time to kick up your feet and relax. It's on the couch.
Biggest fear.
Oh my God. I think probably losing my girls in some way. That's probably, I don't really like to think about that. So I'm assuming that's the biggest fear. Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, that's about it.
Yeah, that's it. Okay. Move on.
Yeah. I'm like, that's it. Move on. I know.
What do you struggle with at the moment?
Money. Mm. Money. Like money, not lack as in like money. Yeah. Money to like eat. Like basics.
Yep. Like,
yeah. Money to go to the grocery store kind of money.
I'm
not
totally
not money to. Yeah. So. Yeah, that's my
yes. Failure. What does failure mean to you?
Oh my. What does failure? You know, I just had a conversation with one of my, like, you know, my business coach, who is also a dear, dear friend, you know, and I was like, I just don't know what I'm doing. I know. What if I had this company, like there's this one, like, this one podcast that has come out and I really love their platform and they're like, you know, like part of the radio world and whatnot. And I'm like, and I could do so much help for them. And I'm like, I don't know. Should I keep doing what I'm doing or should I go and try and get a job with them? Like, I don't know. And she was like, just because you have a 9-to-5 doesn't mean you're a failure. And I was like, oh, okay. So yeah. I guess it's like giving, I don't know, not being what I thought I was. Like, failing at being me, I guess. And I just thought, like, it's under the guise of a job, because I really haven't really had a job, like in the proper sense where you go to the office and you come away every day. I've never really had that. So I'd feel like, not that I would do this for this company either, but I just felt like, well, that would be sort of giving up on me, is how I framed it in my own head. But that really wasn't the case. So maybe that, I don't know if I answered it. But.
No, that's a totally valid response. Because, and something that we all struggle with too, you know, like, I mean, I have times, for me, the struggle is right now that, you know, I have my voiceover agency, I have Radcasters, and I have this book that I want to write, and I have this message that is so important to me right now, yet I let the other things get in the way. So
yeah.
is that a failure? You know, is it me not fully committing to the power of who I really am? Is that failing myself? So yeah. And yeah, I mean, it's such a loaded kind of question.
But I know,
it's like a very different thing to what it meant to me when I was when I was experiencing my $100,000 business failure. Like back then, right. It was, you know, the business failure defined me, and right now it's like my failings or my lack of self-belief is what is failing me right now,
right.
And my idea of needing things to look a certain way, you know. And one of the questions that I'm going to ask you is about success, but you know, like having this idea of what success looks like to me and to society in general, and then it not lining up with what I want to do. So
right.
Does that make me a failure, or does it make it the idea of success that I have the failure, you know? So it's, it's a big question, and that's why I like to ask it because it does mean different things to different people at different stages in their lives too. And where we're at day to day means that we frame these things very differently. So, So what about like the evil bitch in our heads? You know, we all kind of have one telling us a bunch of untruths about ourselves. What do you hear yours say?
Oh my God. Let me see. I like, you know, I think that I can't do it. It happens a lot, you know, that you can't do that. And it had stopped me. It actually stopped me for quite a while. I just got to a position where it was like I had a deadline to meet for some stuff. And I was like, okay, I'm going to just do it. I'm just going to go do it. And I didn't allow it to come in, and I did it, but I still have that. What are you doing? And I don't let that voice in very often. Especially even when I'm questioned about my stuff, like, what does that even mean? Because that's usually the question I get most of the time. What does that mean? Like, what are you doing?
I know.
I speak in another, like a different type of language, you know, and it's like, and sometimes I'm like,
you don't have a neat 90 set, you know, a neat 30 second elevator pitch. I help people blah, blah, blah with the blah, blah, blah. So they can blah, blah, blah.
Well, I don't actually have that. But then sometimes when I do have a 30 second, it involves words that don't make any sense to the most people. And so then I'm like, oh, man, right? Anyway, so, yeah, I tried to keep that voice away, but you can't do that. You can't do that is usually you can't do that. And it's not like it's literally like a parent voice.
Yeah.
You can't do that. The end.
Yep. And then behind that, it's not safe for you to do that. It's not, you know, there's
all of that stuff. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, absolutely.
So a couple of more positive questions. What does success mean to you? What does it look like?
I think I've got most of it. I feel very comfortable, you know, with what we have now here in our little home. And like, I'm not wanting more. I think the success would be just from enough financial support to be able to go to the grocery store and to be able to, you know, I think when the feeling of it is going to be when the girls want to take a class or we have an experience that we want to give them, and we can go like, let's, of course.
Without even thinking.
Two classes. Yeah, like we'll get those two classes. Those are be so, oh my God, they're going to thrive doing that. Or, you know, being able to get some work done. Because there's all of these practitioners here where I live who are amazing. Like there's this woman who does this like deep internal like uterus things.
Wow.
Like pelvic things that are like really neat to like realign stuff. And like an actual like it's sort of like really deep. Physiotherapy of some kind. I mean, it's like amazing stuff where I was reading and I was like, I think I need that.
Yeah. Know? And then you look at like, the bank account, you're like, maybe next week.
No. Yeah, maybe. Yeah. And that's what I'm thinking. It's like, how great would it be to just, and because it's not like I have things happening. I'm just saying like, I think I intuitively know I do need to deal with some of these things right now. It would be really helpful if I could have more alternative medicine in my life so that I could really work on that. I think that would be great. So, and to not have it be about money, because really it generally is. And the majority of the time that I could get an exchange, but I really don't want to anymore. Like, I don't want to be bartering. I do not want to barter. I don't want to barter with people. And people here live on barters, but I don't want to at this moment to do that anymore. I don't want to work with you and you give me eggs. I mean, it does work to some degree because we are getting food, but like there's a part of me now that I'm like, I just want the cash. Just give me the cash.
Show me the money.
So I'm feeling the same way about other people. And so I'm like, I don't want to walk into a practitioner's thing and go like, I can help you do X, Y, Z. I just want to be able to go because I'm committed. I mean, not committed to do the work. I'm committed to actually do work. I mean, instead of do the work to do the stuff that I want to take care of my body with, like, right?
Yeah, right.
If I can just pay whatever, $200, here you go. This is your session. I'm so happy and so proud to be able to just give you the cash, man. Yes, now go for it. Take me over. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Massage my vagina from the inside out. Yeah, go exactly. For it.
Like, yes, finally. No.
And last question, freedom. What does freedom mean?
I think freedom for me would just be to be able to like, you know, leave my house. I guess that's what's so small. For me to be able to go take a walk and not have to worry about who's going to take care of the babies or the girls like at home. Because there's times where I'm like, I just want to go take a hike outside and nobody's home. And I can't leave them at home. Like, I don't feel comfortable. Just, I mean, even though we're kind of remote, so it's not like a city. But I'm like, oh, I wish that I could just do that. I wish that I could take a bike ride when I wanted to. I wish that I could go to the coffee shop for the whole day if I wanted to.
In silence.
Yes, by myself. That I could not feel guilty about recording things. You know, like that's freedom to me. So I think, yeah, that would be great.
Yeah, it would be.
The plug. Instead of filling the podcast with self-promotion, we're being totally transparent. Here's the plug.
Right now, I just sort of revamped my website. You can watch, you can go, I can send you now because I've had website shame now for like almost a decade. LCEscobar.com. So I just, you know, push came to shove. It's not perfect, of course, but you know what? It's more me than it's ever been. And I finally am able to like come out as what I am. And basically, I work with podcasters for in advocacy ways, meaning that I help them step out and be more of who they are. I mean, it's cheesy as that might sound, but there's a point here where I've seen a problem in podcasting that people are talking about metrics, discovery problems. People are creating apps to listen to shows, and everybody's coming at it from the perspective of a media and radio and profitability. And I believe nobody is facing this issue or talking about this issue from the advocacy perspective of talking about how people are actually going to listen to your show. And nobody has talked to the audience. Nobody's talking about the people who are listening. Nobody's talking about to where they're listening. How are they listening? Why aren't they listening? This question doesn't seem to be informative to people. They just decide they're going to create a new app where they're going to discover your show. And nobody's like, what? Do you know when was the last time that you changed a habit, Carly? Like a habit, like where you're just like, hey, I'm just going to stop drinking coffee now, or I'm going to use a different app now, or, yeah. You know, Think about that.
Yeah. I mean, probably the last big one was making my bed.
Okay.
So you
had to decide, but you see, first you had to have a mindset change about that whole thing, right? It had to mean something to you for you to do it. You had to sort of like look at your bed and be like, okay, I'm going to do this. Right. Even if it's just in quotes, making the bed, you had to make a decision. You had to be involved and it had to mean something to you because it had to be something greater than. Right. That's just making the bed.
Yeah.
What's it going to take to somebody to listen to a podcast when they've never listened to one before, ever? And I'm not saying that it's not worth it, but we are fighting against habitual patterns that are ingrained in the way that we consume media. Plus, there's a difference in consuming media from different socioeconomic statuses. So a person who has more wealth is going to consume media differently than someone who has no access. So how do we expect this medium to grow?
Yeah, because right now it's pretty much rich white people who are listening and not it's not a broad spectrum of listeners.
No, it's not. And unfortunately, the ones that will definitely and be most inspired and most needed are not those people. So that's my platform now. So part of it is that I have to start in talking about this, talk about this more. And instead of how many download numbers do we have? Yeah. How many people, you know, because like, oh my God, it's driving me bananas. I don't want to have that conversation.
And you know, anymore. I have taken months off Radcasters because of that. Because the way that I found that, you know, I was told was the way to reach my audience in terms of people who wanted to start a podcast was I need to do case studies. I need to show that this person added 10 grand to their bottom line because they added a podcast and this was their success story and it was all thanks to me. That shit makes me feel like I want to vomit. It's gross.
Exactly.
And it's not the reason that I started a podcast, and it's not the reason that I want anyone to start a podcast.
Yep.
You know, just purely to add to their bottom line. And you know, and the downloads. I mean, I think like we are often on the same page on a lot of this stuff, Elsie, and it's, you know, and it's because if that's, I don't know, it makes me very fired up and angry that we allow these kind of metrics to determine our worth as a human being and the worthiness of our message.
Oh, absolutely. And also the fact that somebody else is okay. So yes, absolutely. Number one. Number two, nobody else is saying anything else. And that's where I, you know, that's when I was sitting in that bag like, but that's not true. But that, you know what? I'm going to shut my mouth up and I'm going to do something about it. Instead of sitting there going like, but you don't understand, I will just take the seat and I will drive the conversation because it's not going to happen if somebody doesn't start to step up and I have the skills and I have the experience and I finally figured it out. You know, I am like a professional podcast listener.
Yeah,
that's what I am. I know how to listen to podcasts like nobody's business and I know exactly what power they have. And if you work with me, I can tell you exactly where your disconnects are, exactly how you're not reaching deeper, exactly what you can do, exactly when you're not on and how to do it in a way that aligns with you so that it both you feel good. And I and the people that not me personally, but the people who are listening are like totally involved. Right.
Yeah, totally.
But that has nothing to do with download numbers.
No.
That has to do with somebody who's invested in you. And, you know, that's what I feel with some of my clients that I've worked with. It's like, it's even though when I work with them, I do prefer people to have a platform already. Like I'm not a fan of launching things and I'm not a fan of teaching how to's. I love refinement. I love to refine, you know, little bits and pieces. But when I got really upset is when I was working with my clients and these are brilliant people who I am so like, wow, you're just fire. And then I look at their download numbers and I'm like, no one is listening. There's definitely a disconnect here. And it has nothing to do with the quality of their content. It has something to do with something else. And I think part of it is that we had to take responsibility for that as well. And I'm going to help, you know, and part of it is that I am in a position where I can cast light on these people. I am in a position where I can go check out so-and-so. She's got this amazing thing. Have you heard of it? And people happen to do what I say. So I will use that for the powers of good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, I just, you know, that's like a thing. I didn't know that that was a thing I did. And then I'm like, you know what? That's a thing I do. I should use that. I can do that. And I do it anyway. So I thought, like, I have to do it because I can't stop. I cannot stop myself anymore. So that's my thing. Yes. And, you know, there's been a lot of people who have told me, what is a podcast advocate? Like, what do you, how is that a business? And you know what? I'm still figuring it out. I'm still trying to process like lots of different things. There's a lot of models that I'm looking out around because I do feel that it's something bigger than myself. I don't think that it's like LC Escobar by any means. I happen to do these things, but I think that there's something else that's around this. And I feel that it needs to rise to something that's collective. And I just feel like it needs to happen in some way. I haven't figured out quite how, but I'm doing it. I'm starting, which is why I launched my little thing. Like I have this little thing, dude. I'm sorry. I'm getting really excited now. I'm like, oh my God, this is so great.
So tell us about this little thing.
I know. So it's really, really, actually, it's like a super charged session with me. So literally what it is, it's just you spend, you know, 60 to 90 minutes with me. And there's a bonus of a community. So the community is not like work. It's not group work. It's not anything. It's not a mastermind. It's not like you show up and do it. Literally is a time where you come in and work on whatever you want. You can work by yourself. You can work with the people there, or you can work with me. You can ask me questions. I'll be there. But it's really about figuring out how to advocate for each other and podcasting together, right? That's just part of that group part. But the one-on-one session really is like I dive into your stuff and then I will help you with all that stuff, because there's people that come to me with like, you know, I'm really having a hard time with this specific type of workflow. I don't want to spend 20 hours on my podcast. I would like to do it to 10 hours. So usually it's very keyed in, like a very specific thing that we work on, and like we'll go through that. Or it could be like, I don't know, you know, the content or the audio quality or whatever, you know. Part of it is that you get that. You get me listening to you, and then we can take it. Because what happens is people work with me and I give them all of this stuff, and then they're so like, oh my God, yeah, that's amazing. And then they can't, yes, not that they can't do it, but it's just so much, right?
Yeah, yeah, totally. So I was doing podcast reviews there for a while where I would listen to their show and come back, and we would have a session where I would talk them through what I found. And yeah, and they would get all excited and they were like, yeah. But then they just go off and silence, radio silence.
I know, exactly. And it's like, and it's not that they don't want, and I think that's what it is. It's like, there's a part of, it's that follow up, right? There's a few of my clients who are real go-getters. So like, as soon as we're done, we're like, is it like this? Like this? You mean like this? Okay, I'm trying this, like, it's this excitement. And I'm like, ooh, I love that, right? But there's some that it's like, there's a lot of work. And part of it is that I am the advocate. I'm like the one that's going to be like, remember how I told you that you needed to be like on stage? Remember when I said that? Okay, here's the stage. I found you one. Go. Okay. You know what I mean? So it's like, I'm the one that's going to be the one that, remember when I said this? Here it is. Go get it.
Yeah.
Together, right now, it's time. So that's kind of what I figured, because I thought, you know, part of it is the collective follow through. And what I'm looking for are people who really resonate with podcasting too. So that's another level where they feel the podcasting space matters to them. And so we can find solutions. Somebody just asked me, you know, like, how do people subscribe in Android? Okay, let's together come up with ways for people to know how to subscribe to podcasts in Android. What are the best things? Let's how many of us are here, let's all figure out how to do it. What's the best thing? What are your problems when you're subscribing? Like, you know, that kind of stuff. So, because that needs to be addressed.
Totally.
We don't. We just figure like, that guy's got a button. I want those buttons.
Yeah.
And you just put a button. But what does that button do? What's the actual experience from the end user? We don't really deal with that.
The takeaway: exercises or tips for positive change, sprinkled with salt and vinegar, wrapped in newspaper, and handed over the counter from our special guest to you.
Just speak up. Ask for help if you need it. If you're feeling ashamed, there is no judgment coming from somebody when you ask for help. Like, I don't know. I feel that the angel that needs to be in front of you will be there when you need it. Don't be afraid. Don't feel that you are too lowly, because I had that. I am too lowly to ask this big, high person for help. I am too lowly. But you know what? You are absolutely worth it. So ask. Ask. Yeah, that's it. Just simple. But I think that all of us need that, to know that we are worth it. So
totally. And it's something that I struggle with day to day. You know, it really is. It's like support is always there. We just need to lean into it. And we don't. And often it's just to save face.
Oh, yeah. Oh my God. Yeah.
And that's sad. Yep. You know, we can just ask without shame.
Absolutely.
Well, yes. Thank you so much. This was just as amazing as I knew it was going to be.
Oh, it's so fun.
Sweet. Thank you so much for having me on.
Pleasure. Yay. My pleasure.
Thanks for tuning in to the Carlosophies podcast with me, Carly Nimmo. Let's continue the conversation at carlynimmo.com. If you were a big fan of the podcast, I'd be stoked if you left a review. And if you want to hear more radness just like this, be sure to subscribe and spread the word. In the meantime, be real, be rad. Peace out.